The Declaration of Independence says the Creator has given us our rights, including the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, lately, many Americans are struggling to get along financially, and in fact, homelessness is increasing. But does that increase represent only financial struggles? Nils Grevelius is the author of The Last Lawman, The Stories of a Private Detective. He's a Los Angeles-based private investigator with more than 30 years of experience conducting cases across all 50 states and around the world. And he joins us to discuss the homeless crisis. Now, earlier, and we'll have a link to his earlier discussion, he focused on L.A., but Nils, welcome back to the program, and I wanted to know if you could talk about homelessness in other parts of the country, not just Los Angeles.
Well, I certainly can, Mr. Newcomb. We can do that.
Yes. So first of all, how did you, when you first started studying homelessness, I mean, this problem just seems like it's mushroomed in the last few years.
It's been steadily growing, and I'm going to point out that we do the people who are on the streets a disservice by calling them homeless.
Okay, what should they be called?
Well, if someone's a drug addict, I call them a drug addict. If someone is an alcoholic, I call them an alcoholic. If someone is mentally ill, I call him either mentally ill, or if I'm upset with him, perhaps I'll call him crazy. Only a minuscule percentage of these people are sleeping on the streets because of economic concerns. These people have traded the normal life of an American for a life of dereliction, mostly because of substance abuse.
Huh. You know, by the way, this radio station is housed in Florida. And I remember somebody once said years ago in reference to, you know, people from up north coming down here, hey, it's a lot better to, you know, you know, sleep on the streets or on the beach or something in Fort Lauderdale than it is to freeze up north if you're homeless or home free or whatever. What's the term you use as a instead of homeless?
If I'm a derelict, I'm a derelict. You know, Mr. Newcomb, if you see me living on the streets, it'll be because I have crawled into the bottle or somebody has introduced me to some amazing new drug that will make me trade my family, my life, my home, my profession, and everything I ever stood for just to get more of that drug.
Okay, how did you get interested in this as a subject? I mean, even as a private investigator and so forth, tell us about that.
Well, as a private detective, I have to interact with people in every strata, from the wealthiest to the poorest. And I'm going to point out, any city in this country that has a burgeoning problem of men and women living in dumpsters, in alleys, under bridges, etc., they have a government problem more than they have anything else. And it is that they are fertilizing and irrigating a crisis of drug dependency and alcoholism. The way that they do that is with homeless services, which are cryptocurrency for the people running the homeless services. The people getting better as the result of homeless services are the parasites in the NGOs who just turn that into an upper middle class lifestyle, irrespective of the growing numbers. LAHSA, which is a Los Angeles housing authority here, and the people who are charged with our government with taking care of the homeless situation in Los Angeles County, reported last week, by their estimate, in 2025, dereliction or homelessness rose by 8%. Even though they have this amazing program to move people into broken down motels and get them free housing, that sort of thing, they've just grown the problem, is what they have done. They have fertilized it and irrigated it. The single greatest factor in this, Mr. Newcomb, is a lack of hard consequences, natural consequences for dereliction. You say that it is cruel, perhaps, to jail a man for using drugs. Maybe it's cruel to jail him for 20 years for using drugs, But if you jail him for 20 days for having, you know, heroin in his pocket, fentanyl in his pocket, he has to detox in jail. And then you kick him back out onto the street. And the psychic pain of detoxification, if you do that launder, rinse, repeat, men and women like that get on their knees and start looking for a solution to their problem. If I'm meeting every need that they have no reason to change.
Or I'm going to quote something from the Bible, and I want your reaction to it. Some people say, oh, that's a mean statement. Others say, no, actually, it's a very compassionate statement. The Apostle Paul writes in Thessalonians letter, he says, if a man refuses to work, then neither shall he eat. And that's the rule we have in the churches. That's what he said. What are your thoughts on that? 2 Thessalonians 3.
I don't think that the Apostle Paul missed anything in expressing this in Thessalonians, Mr. Newcomb. I think he's right to the point.
Do you see it as a compassionate statement?
It is a compassionate statement. When my mother, when I was 3, prevented me from turning on the stove burner and playing with the flame, was she being cruel to me by denying me my immediate desire, or was she protecting me from myself? She was protecting me from myself, and that is compassion.
So
we have guardrails in society, in secular society, to protect people. Well, if people within the church system cannot see that this is compassionate, are they really churches? I mean, more and more what I see, and I'm not criticizing GraceNet, I see a lot of denominations that have just turned into soft dating clubs for homosexuals and things like that, rather than anything biblical, anything bordering on authentic faith. Mr. Newcomb, set me straight if I'm wrong.
So help me to understand here. Let's focus on the homeless or the dereliction issue. Basically, what you're saying is the way society, or at least some parts of society, are dealing with these kinds of issues actually, in effect, exacerbates the problem. And by the way, wouldn't
fertilize,
it be... Yeah, go
fertilizes
ahead.
And irrigates it. I'm going to give you a very clear example. There's a former congresswoman named Katie Hill, who became a millionaire running homeless services in Los Angeles County. Then she became a congresswoman. Then she resigned from Congress because she had been sexually abusing a female staff member, she and her husband, and that all blew up, I think in 2019, 2018, something like that. In Pasadena, California, there is a well-meaning charity called Union Station, and it is heavily affiliated with the Episcopalian Church in Pasadena. And every year since the year I got out of the Army, 1987, they have complained about dereliction on the streets of Pasadena. I think at the time they could count over 100 derelicts in Pasadena in 1987. And they asked for city funds, state funds, county funds. They asked that the police stop enforcing vagrancy laws, petty theft laws, public intoxication laws, public indecency laws, all of the things associated with substance abuse disorder. And it attracted more and more derelicts to Pasadena. Well, Ms. Hill is now the director of Union Station, and she is just going further down the road with this. She has a very high salary and great benefits for everybody on her staff, and they're all doing very well with it, but they don't have substance abuse disorder that I can tell. Only the people who are the foils for their program have the disorder, and they are the ones not doing so well because they have created more opportunities for people to drink, to use drugs, to be derelict, to abandon their families, to abandon their jobs. They have removed every single foreseeable consequence, natural consequence, from addiction and alcoholism that they possibly could.
Wow. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let me ask you this. Since you investigate different parts of the country, can you say, okay, this particular community is handling the dereliction problem well? They're doing the right things. They're a success story in your book. I'm curious.
Well, Des Moines, Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa has a modest homeless population. That's someplace you wouldn't necessarily want to be sleeping out on the streets anywhere between, say, October and April. It gets pretty cold there. But they also enforce public camping ordinances. They enforce public intoxication ordinances. They arrest people dealing drugs at the retail level. So they have a consequence-ordered society. So most of their derelict population flees to cities like Chicago, where there is very little consequence for the addiction other than the addiction itself. There's a vast network of public and private shelters, et cetera, that feed them, allow them to sleep in the winter, that sort of thing. And then they go right back out onto the streets to caper, use drugs, prostitute themselves, and destroy their lives, their families, et cetera.
You know, I there's such a different approach in terms of how this works. And I think that, in other words, what the left does, it basically, they subsidize this and they're going to get more of it. And, you know, when the people like DeSantis or whatever, they run things well, they tend to minimize this human misery.
That is correct. Now, Governor DeSantis is a great example of a governor who sees things rather clearly. If you get caught using drugs, drunk driving, et cetera, all of these things in the state of Florida, you're going to pay a consequence for it. And without consequences, men and women have no reason to change. Now, one of the objections that the left has raised to the traditional model of dealing with substance abuse disorder is that there's a fair amount of talk about God in organizations like Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, and people get sent to those meetings by the government, you know, after their second or third DUI or getting arrested in possession of narcotics, that sort of thing. And the left acts as if this is government endorsing religion. All government is doing is showing them to people who seem to have found a way to beat the problem of addiction and alcoholism. I think that those 12-step organizations have a remarkable record for rehabilitating people and helping people find their own way without having to be diapered and pampered at every step of the every turn of the compass.
Boy, that is so true. And in fact, the Alcoholics Anonymous was born in the 1930s, you know, in the church with Bill Wilson and so forth. You know, one phrase that comes to my mind in terms of this whole discussion is toxic compassion. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, okay, so I have a lot of thoughts on this toxic compassion or suicidal empathy. That's another way to explain it or characterize it, Jay. This is my thought. When somebody is so compassionate that they'll put blinders on and actually harm the person whom they pretend to be helping, it's not about the suffering addict, the misguided alcoholic, the mentally ill man living in filth on a freeway off-ramp. It's about the person who is directing efforts and money and that sort of thing. It's about their emotional needs, their well-being, not about the person suffering.
Okay, we have 30 seconds left. If somebody got your book, The Last Lawman, True Stories of a Private Detective, would they find stories about homeless or dereliction?
They would find about a whole story on narcotics culture, the problem of narcotics and how it has destroyed vast swaths of what was once productive America, Jay.
Wow. All right. Any closing thought? 10 seconds.
Well, I want everybody out there to be safe. Put your back into the oars and pray to God.
All right. Nils Grevillius. Am I saying that right? Grevillius?
Yeah, close enough. It doesn't matter, Jerry Newcomb.
Okay.
You and I will be friends no matter what.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a great day.